Now, as the sun's last rays glimmer out, the air momentarily shivers, tightening, drawing in on itself, as though experiencing a chill. Through the window, the first car headlights sweep up the avenue. A caravan of others wink in the distance beyond the tennis courts. An elf, and what looks like a pint-sized science teacher, bustle out of their dorm room to call on another three doors down.
Yes?
Dennis, quarter opening the door.
Are you nearly ready?
I am, but I'm waiting for Niall.
Strolling up the corridor, clicking his fingers, Mario appears in a dark brown leather jacket, a pair of impenetrably black sunglasses, and a glistening patina of hair gel.
Are you bitches hot to trot? It's about to start.
Who are you supposed to be? The Fonz?
I am going as the famous stud, Mario Bianchi.
Mario says, with a snap of his gum. Dennis just rolls his eyes.
What in God's name is that smell?
Ruprecht covers his nose with a tweedy sleeve.
That, my friend, is aftershave. Some day, if you ever start shaving and you stop being a gay, you will maybe use it yourself.
It smells like you've been pickled.
Mario chews his gum, unperturbed, runs a hand through his slimy hair.
So, what are we waiting for?
Niall,
Dennis says, still keeping himself semi-concealed behind the door. Mario turns his attention to Skippy, panning slowly up from his runners, fitted out with tiny wings, to his crepe paper hunting hat, which sports a long speckled feather.
Who are you? Wait, let me guess. You're that faggy elf from that gay game of yours?
Skippy's been working on his costume for the last three nights, and it does look impressively elvish. Over a green tank top, one of several, of Ruprecht's that has shrunk in the wash, he's slung a quiver of glowstick arrows of light. A plywood and tinfoil sword of songs hangs from his belt in a scabbard made from tennis racket grip, alongside a rolled-up map of Hopeland, authentic parchment effect. Soak an ordinary sheet of paper in strong coffee, then put it in the oven at 200 degrees. Ruprecht's outfit is decidedly more prosaic. Slacks, tie, horn-rimmed spectacles, and a brown tweed jacket with leather elbow patches that is too long and insufficiently wide.
Von Boring, did anyone explain to you that you're supposed to wear a costume?
Ruprecht blinks in surprise.
I'm Hideo Tomasi.
Mario looks blank.
Professor Emeritus of Physics at Stanford, revolutionized the entire field of cosmology. Probably the most important scientist since Einstein.
Oh, that Hideo Tomasi.
Dennis shakes his head.
I have to hand it to you, Skippy. Blowjob. I didn't think you could possibly look any nerdier than you already are, but this is something really special.
What about you, Dennis? Skippy says. Who are you going as? Without replying, Dennis steps out into the hall and performs a 360 in a rumpled charcoal grey suit. A neat row of ballpoint pens pokes from his shirt pocket and a Seabrook pin from his tie.
Can't you tell? Let me give you a clue.
With two hands, he rubs vigorously at his face and hair, emerging flushed and bellicose, and in a stentorian voice bellows,
Come on, you slackjaws, show some moxie. I'm not running a kindergarten here. Ship up or shape out. My way or the highway.
His eyes flick eagerly over the faces of the others, in whom realization is just beginning to twitch.
Well, actually, the costume's not quite finished. I mean, it's only half of the costume.
He says cryptically. Then, craning his neck, calls into the room behind him,
Are you nearly ready in there?
I'm ready.
Niall's voice, sounding singularly dejected, returns.
Behold, gentlemen.
The door at last swings open, and Dennis steps aside with a ringmasterly bow to reveal, in the middle of the room, Niall, in a disastrous floral pinafore, a blonde wig, and high heels. The dress has been enhanced by two balloons up top and a cushion in the belly area. Niall, underneath a lurid layer of enthusiastically applied makeup, wears an expression of profound suffering and humiliation. It takes a moment for the others to realize the full genius of this double act. Then the first giggles emerge, transmuting swiftly into guffaws.
What are you clowns laughing at?
Dennis barks.
Laughing's for chumps. Take a note, Trudy.
Resignedly, Niall reaches into his handbag and produces a clipboard.
Van Doren, suspension. Juster, expulsion. The wop I once served up on a pizza. No, wait. A calzone. God damn it, Trudy, why the hell are you riding so slowly? You're not pregnant again, are you?
No, master. Sorry, master.
Niall cringes in falsetto.
That's the spirit.
Dennis claps him on the back, sending a rugby ball tumbling from between Niall's legs, swaddled in a blue and gold Seabrook jersey. If he finds out about this, you are so dead, Skippy says. You're deader than dead.
Juster, when I want your opinion, I'll ask for it.
Dennis continues, then turns to the band of maskers who've halted on their way downstairs to mill around the doorway.
Fix that hair. Close that mind. Repeat after me. Page me the second the old man croaks it. Now, are you boys ready? A Seabrook boy is always ready. Ready to work. Ready to play. Ready to listen to his teachers. Especially the greatest educator of them all, Jesus. As Jesus said to me once, Greg, what's your secret? And I said, Jesus, study your notes. Get to class. Shave that beard. You show up to your first day on the job dressed like a hippie, of course they're going to crucify you. I don't care whose son you are.
In this fashion, the faux acting principal and his ersatz wife leave the room and are ushered to the head of the crowd to lead the procession downstairs, the laughter of the other boys ringing around them and split more or less equally between admiration of their bravado and gleeful anticipation of the moment they get caught. Wait, I just have to get something. The cavalcade's already tripped away on hearing, down the spiral staircase. Back in his room, Skippy flips over the pillow and hovers there. He hasn't taken a pill in days and days. It's partly because the last time he took one, he threw up on Kevin Wong. But it's mostly because of seeing her, because the feelings he's had ever since he saw her have chased away the feelings he was having before. Maybe not chase them away entirely, but to somewhere deep underground, where you can barely hear them whispering and growling. He's still freaking out. Today, especially. He hasn't been able to eat. And every time he thinks of Frisbee Girl, which is every second, his heart starts going a trillion miles an hour. But it's a different kind of freaking out. It's not like being attacked by his own brain, joined forces with the stuff around him so he has to cover his head. It's not the moments gathered against him, throwing him from one to the other. Instead, everything follows on from everything else, the way it does in a story, and the air around him is turbulent and pure and cold, like standing under a waterfall. Can there be such a thing as happy terror? All Skippy knows is that he doesn't feel like blocking it out. Just to be on the safe side, though, he slips the tube into his quiver. Then he runs off after the others, and they twist through the narrow, dark-panelled corridors of the tower and out into the quad, where they stop and catch their breath. Night has fallen, utterly black, moon and stars inked out by storm clouds that seem, even now, still to be arriving on the scene. The air is full of staticky rain that doesn't fall but hangs, tingling, waiting for you to walk into it. That's not all it's full of. From the leaf-strewn laneway leading down to Ed's Donut House, from the avenue that snakes past the priest's residence to the back gate by St. Bridget's, from the road by the tennis court that goes to the main entrance, costumed forms are arriving, many of them, among the cowboys, devils, giant spiders, rugby internationals, Jasons and Freddies, corpses in various states of decay, costumed female forms. The car park is a riot of bare legs, flashing silver in headlights as they debouch from Saabs, Audis, SUVs. And as soon as these latter have gone, coats are shrugged off to reveal equally bare arms, bare midriffs, and as much cleavage as they can get away with. It seems the girls have by and large played down creativity in favour of the opportunity to dress slutty. Naughty nurses sashay up with kinky cowgirls, A pneumatic Lara Croft in thigh-high boots carries the nacreous tail fin of a mermaid, who for one heart-stopping moment appears naked from the waist up, till you realize she's wearing a flesh-toned leotard. S&M cop, porno Cleopatra, four woozy princesses tripping arm-in-arm in princess heels up the bumpy laneway. Two catwomen, already arching their backs at each other. A host of Bethanys in various guises familiar from the videos, all flocking to join the line that extends down the steps from the doors of the sports hall through which music swirls and colours glint like promises. The boarders, attempting to take this in, are for a moment reluctant to move. It's as though they've stumbled upon Xanadu, right here in their own school, and they fear they might somehow shatter the illusion, scatter this heady dream to the four winds. Then, as a man, they think better of it, and hurry down to join the queue. At the top of the steps, the automator is delivering his last-minute instructions to Howard the Coward and Miss McIntyre.
It is now 7:45. At 8:30, I want these doors closed. There is to be absolutely no admittance after 8:30 under any circumstances. Prior to 10:30 p.m., no one is to leave except with your permission. Once they leave, there is no readmittance. Anyone behaving in a disruptive or inappropriate fashion, I want their parents called immediately. And anyone...
He raises his voice here.
Found to be in possession or under the influence of alcohol or controlled substances of any kind is to be punished with immediate suspension, pending full investigation by the school board.
He casts a searing gaze over the line of suddenly terrified-looking youngsters, frozen silently on the hall steps, holding their alcoholic breath.
Good,
he pronounces. Already late for his fundraising dinner at Seabrook Rugby Club, he takes his leave of the chaperones and strides down the hall in the direction of the car park. Then, a little distance past the tail of the queue, he stops. Scratching his head, he turns and slowly retraces his steps, as if he is not quite sure what he is looking for, until he arrives at Dennis and Niall. A silence falls over the assembled maskers. Smoothing down his red tie, adjusting his charcoal blazer, the automator stares at Dennis through narrowed eyes. Dennis, identically attired, hums nervously to himself, keeping his eyes fixed on the reptilian neck of Max Brady in front of him. Giggles begin to escape up and down the line. The effect, for anyone looking on, which everyone is akin to that of the automator staring into a fairground mirror. His gaze flicks over to Niall, then back to Dennis. He begins to say something, then stops. After a full minute of naked staring, in which Dennis comes close to tears, he grunts, turns on his heel, and continues on his way. They listen to his footsteps echo off to the car park. The car door chunks open and closed, and the motor starts. And then, as it revs off into the night, there is a mighty cheer.
You are all suspended.
Acting Principal Dennis Hoey cries,
Halloween is banned. Study your navels. Cut those notes.
Niall shakes his head and silently thanks God, whom he has promised never to listen to Dennis again. The doors are opened, and the line progresses swiftly forward. But before the party can begin, there remains one last trial to get through. The sports hall antechamber, where, seated alone at a table, Father Green is taking entrance money. The light here is sterile and unforgivingly bright, reducing them, no matter how glamorous or outlandish their attire, once more to children. As they shuffle by him to drop their crumpled fives into the bucket, the priest thanks them in an impersonal, excessively courteous tone, keeping his eyes firmly averted from the almost universally sacrilegious costumes, not to mention the acres of goose-pimpled flesh. Still, the transaction leaves them with a strange chill of ignominy, and they hurry away as quickly as they...
Oh, Mr. Juster!
Skippy reluctantly turns back from the door. What is the problem? Didn't he see him put in his money? The priest's lashes, long and surprisingly feminine, waft upwards, uncloaking the coal-black stare.
You appear to be losing a wing.
He extends a knotted finger. Looking down, Skippy sees that the feathers have come unpinned from the ankle of one dragonskin boot. He bends quickly and adjusts it, then mumbling his thanks, hastens into the hall.